About 1 in 5 Americans live with a diagnosable mental illness. Today's guests are creators of a program that uses storytelling and expressive arts to create peace of mind. They're Jeff Sparr and Matt Kaplan this week on Story in the Public Square. Hello and welcome to Story in the Public Square, where storytelling meets public affairs. I'm Jim Lutis from the Pell Center at Salve Regina University, alongside my co-host G. Wayne Miller from the Providence Journal. The show is about the power of stories to change lives. Typically, we're talking about the use of storytelling in public affairs and politics, but today we're interested in the role storytelling can play in an individual's mental health. To help us, we're joined by the co-founders of Peace Love Studios, Jeff Sparr and Matt Kaplan. Gentlemen, thank you for being with us.
Pleasure.
Thanks for having us.
So you're champions of storytelling, and the expressive arts as a means to achieve peace of mind. Tell us what that means, and tell us about the work and the role storytelling plays in it.
You want me to start off? Sure.
Go ahead.
So at Peace Love, it's all about promoting stories, you know, creating positive awareness for, you know, people's struggles, people's successes, and expressing oneself authentically, imaginatively, and, you know, using an expressive art as a modality to share one's story, to talk about healing, to talk about where that person might be along their journey.
And when we're talking about expressive art,
yep.
What does that mean?
So you know what fine arts is, mm-hmm. You know what arts and crafts is. Mm-hmm. We're neither of those, we're expressive art, so we're not worried about the product, it's about the process, right? So we don't judge someone's painting. If I looked at your painting, I wouldn't say, hey, that black must mean you're feeling a certain way. You know, we would encourage people through their art to share what they were comfortable sharing.
You know, at the end of the day, in its simpler form, we probably, you know, always like to say, everybody's got a story. Mm-hmm. You know, unfortunately, we don't live in a world where it's okay to tell your story. And I think we're trying to create, you know, an environment, a platform where, you know, it's simply just okay.
And there's therapeutic quality in it being okay.
Yeah, again, you know, not a doctor, not a therapist, just a regular guy, but there's something that is empowering about just being able to tell one's story.
So take us inside Peace Love Studios, you know, both the centers that you have and the programs that you do, and for our viewers and listeners who may not know what you do.
Sure.
What do you guys do?
Yeah, so Peace Love is all about changing the way that people think about mental health, and we use expressive arts as a way to help people create peace of mind. So really, from the start, you know, Jeff painted, it made him feel better. He thought it would help others. That inspired me. We're cousins, we're business partners. and I witnessed firsthand when he would go in and share his story in a children's intensive treatment unit at a hospital, how transformative that was. Not the art experience per se, but just somebody sharing their story and talking about, in his case, his obsessive compulsive disorder openly. Sure. Yeah, please.
No, Jeff, so go back to your own personal history. Before there was Peace Love Studios, before you discovered your own gift for art, and we'll get into that too. Go back before all that.
Yeah.
Just give us a little of your background, where you came from, and when your OCD first began to exemplify itself.
You know, I'm a Rhode Islander. I went to school with Moses Brown, went on tennis scholarship to Ohio State. The Ohio State University, and came home. My family had a textile business, 23 years old, looked like I have the world at my feet. Meanwhile, you know, I'm going crazy. My mind's being overtaken by these terrible, you know, obsessive thoughts. And, you know, but as I like to tell people, I was one of the lucky ones. I found my way to Butler Hospital. I was diagnosed with OCD, and, you know, I've fought a debilitating illness now for 30 some odd years, but, you know, I'm lucky. I got help. You know, and through medication, exposure therapy, a wonderful family, been able to have a wonderful life, but the whole time, you know, fighting, always looking for that magic pill, that lightning bolt to get me better, which we all know doesn't exist. And on a whim, 20-some-odd years ago, I was coming home from work one day, and somebody said to me that painting might be good for me. You know, when you're desperate, you try anything. I never painted a day in my life. and I
really stopped. Never.
No, nope. So.
Never like not even a doodle.
No, just so I pulled over, went to the art supply store, came home, and you've all seen Forrest Gump and how he ran.
Yeah,
looking at the Forrest Gump painting, you know, it literally changed my life. I never stopped.
Wow.
And you know, got to the point where I saw the power of art and the healing power and what it could do. So as Matt said, you know, I painted and I figured if it was good for me, it might be good for somebody else. And that literally is how this thing started.
But you could have kept that talent to yourself. I mean, you could have just gone home and painted and put stuff on your walls and given your works of art to friends. But you did more than that. What motivated you to?
He was an expert at giving his art away for free. and I told him that was a really bad move for his art career, you know, financially.
So, he's generous.
He's very generous. But the truth is, you know, people really liked his art, connected to his art, and people would have purchased his art. So I volunteered as his cousin to have an art show for him. And I think it was late 2009 we had an art show, and in one night we sold $16,000 worth of art.
Wow.
And I had checks, cash, a bunch of money, and I said, you know, I gave it to him. I said, what do you want to do with it? And he looked at me and thought for a few minutes and then said, you know, I paint. It makes me feel better. Maybe it'll help others. And I remember 2 weeks later, we were in that children's intensive treatment unit at Butler Hospital, bringing a program that we hadn't even named yet, but we ended up calling it Paint for Peace, Peace of Mind. You know, through the experience and through sharing stories, it was pretty incredible what happened, what I witnessed. So. That was the start.
Was there anything, any other organization or like this that you knew of? I mean, you weren't following someone else's game plan?
No, I think the interesting thing about what we've done is, you know, I always like to tell people, if everybody goes left, we've gone right now for 7-8 years. I mean, you want to make major change, social change, sometimes you have to do things differently, and I think we've done it at every step of the way. I think what was interesting when we started, you know, I had painted this, you know, my background is marketing, and, you know, while all this was going on in my life, I was, you know, intrigued and fascinated kind of simultaneously by the fact that, you know, there were pink ribbons, yellow bracelets, campaign red, every cause had something, but there was nothing for mental health and nothing for mental wellness, and the tens of millions of people, like their families and myself, to rally behind, so I had painted that symbol that you see. And at the time, it was deeply personal. It was obviously the combination of two icons, but for me, peace of mind and love for yourself, the two things I was most desperate for. So got a crazy idea that we'd try to make mental illness cool. Not cool to have it, because I can assure you, not cool to have, but cool to support it. So we said, you know, could this symbol play that role in kind of helping, you know, transform a society's ability to support in a way mental health.
It's interesting. So we've had other guests on talking about mental health, and a lot of people talk about mental health, and a lot of people study it, they work for it. You celebrate it. Why is celebrating mental health important?
Yeah, you know, the phrase I use in my own story, I say, and that of so many, it's not despite but because. You know, things happen for a reason. This is a great day being here with you guys and chatting and get to do some pretty incredible stuff, you know, in our lives right now and helping people. And none of that would have been possible if, you know, I didn't have mental illness. So, you know, things happen. And I think that, you know, when you look at it that way, perhaps it's through a different scope.
Yeah, and I think the only thing to add to that is, you know, the stat is fairly staggering, right? 1 in 4 people will struggle with a diagnosable mental illness in their lifetime, which means every single one of us has a family member, a friend, a colleague, you know, someone that we're...
I got it covered at this table. So you guys can all relax a little bit. So.
We all have a connection, you know, and the truth is there's so much stigma and shame in this society and globally, in global societies, you know, to talk about these illnesses, to talk about these challenges. So I think when there's good stories and there's positive things happening in the world, if we shine a light on those and we tell those stories, that's how I think you affect change. Obviously, if you watch the news and it's connected to mental health, it's typically a nice story, right? So I think that's always been kind of one of our goals, is to promote the great work that people are doing that may be struggling, you know, that may have a diagnosable mental illness, that may just be supporting a loved one. But I think that collection of stories, I think that builds momentum, and I think that's how you can make a difference.
So you reach out to and include people who are living with mental illness and have mental health issues, but use the term social change. too. And your organization, I think, clearly is involved in advancing that as well. And we're about public policy here as well as storytelling. So talk about the social change aspect. I mean, you've kind of hit on, not kind of, you have hit on it talking about stigma. But you become a very public and vocal group, national and, yeah. and now going international. So you have a bigger role than simply using arts to try to feel better and be mentally well.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's biggest level, and you know, again, I talk of it only in simple terms that I can, you know, and granted, it's what we dedicated our lives to, but I think it's one of the, you know, stigma that surrounds mental health and mental illness. I think is that last great social injustice that we haven't got our hands on, you know, and I ask people all the time. People ask me all the time as I'm traveling and speaking, you know. You know, why haven't we made the kind of progress that we should? And, you know, I don't want to say I'm controversial, only controversial, not to downgrade the incredible work that organizations like ours and so many others are making, but, you know, who are we kidding? It should be like this, and we're here right now. And the truth of the matter is, you know, we're going to have to, you know, do things a little bit differently, you know, to start. And, you know, so I'm sorry, what I was going to say is that, you know, so people ask all the time, you know, why haven't we made that kind of progress? And my answer is always the same, invisible and misunderstood. You know, how do you tackle something you can't see and you can't understand? And I think that's one of the challenges behind this, and educating people and getting them to understand empathetically.
Yeah. And we don't quote a lot of stats, but the other stat that's really well known is two-thirds of people actually won't get help due to the fact that there's so much shame around this issue. So I think, you know, when we think about one in four, he'll tell you that, you know, in his lifetime, we're not going to cure his mental illness, maybe, but not likely. But we can affect change for the two-thirds of people that may not get help due to that stigma, that shame, because our approach is giving people, celebrating people's stories, giving people permission to share their stories, share their connections to their own mental health, and make those connections in meaningful ways, right, where people can heal.
And letting them know that they're not alone. They're not alone in suffering
exactly.
the mental illness.
Exactly. And I think when you know, our programs are in schools, hospitals, behavioral health centers, after school programs, corporate boardrooms, you don't know necessarily. I mean, if one of your colleagues was struggling with a cancer diagnosis, visually you might be able to see that and empathize with that. When someone is suffering silently, maybe from a mental health disorder, a little bit more challenging, right? So trying to break down some of those barriers and trying to promote wellness every step of the way.
So Peace Love is in the private sector. I mean, there are other groups, of course, as you know. There's NAMI, there's Mental Health America. There are a number of other groups in the private sector. From where I come from, and I've covered mental health issues for a very long time in the media for the Providence Journal, there is another sector that has to play a role in this larger picture, and that's the government. And government at all levels, from the federal government to state governments to city and town governments. Do you get involved in that sphere at all in terms of what you think government policy should be or what role, and I'm not saying necessarily specific programs unless you want to talk about those. Where does government fit in all this?
It's a good question. I mean, we are not the government guys. You know, where we've looked at where we can have the most, make the most change or garner the most support is through corporations. You know, we think corporations have a responsibility to be talking about and promoting wellness, mental health specifically in the workplace, and also that translates into the community. We are starting to get ourselves into programs where we're working with, you know, state behavioral health clinics or state and federal penitentiaries, the prison system. So we're starting
veterans.
Yeah. So we're on the cusp of that. Just our program, which we can talk a little bit about, called Creators. We just launched it 2 years ago, and we're just starting to get back some of the, you know, evidence-based metrics that are exciting, you know, within the last 6 months. So I think we'll be in a position shortly to be able to go to city government, state government, federal government and say, hey, these programs are preventative in nature, are creative in nature, they have good outcomes, and they're helping improve people's health.
We need to take a quick moment for station identification. This is Story in the Public Square. where storytelling meets public affairs. An audio version of this program can be heard 3 times each weekend on Sirius XM Satellite Radio's Politics of the United States, the POTUS Channel 124. And we're produced each week by a talented team of professionals at Rhode Island PBS. I'm Jim Lutis from the Pell Center at Salve Regina University. If you want to catch up with me on Twitter, I'm at JMLutis. And the co-host chair, as usual, is author, filmmaker, and journalist for the Providence Journal, G. Wayne Miller. He tweets at G. Wayne Miller. And our guests this week, co-founders of Peace Love Studios, Jeff Sparr and Matt Kaplan. You can follow their work on Twitter at PeaceLoveRI. PeaceLoveRI. Gentlemen, you mentioned the Creators Project. Tell us a little bit more about what exactly that entails.
Sure. So when we started Peace Love back in 2010, we were the direct service provider, right? So we have a physical studio space, and we would bring school groups in, we'd travel to hospitals, we would provide the expressive arts services. And over the course of 3 years, we created a pretty serious demand for our programs to the point where we were getting hundreds of requests per week. We kind of sat, looked at each other, and said, "You know, we need a better plan.
Oops, be careful what you're wishing."
Yeah, we need a better plan and a better strategy because, you know, this guy's always dreamed that we could help millions of people create peace of mind through these programs. So, late 2014, we met with a very smart group of people that we're fortunate to have in our corner, and we approached CVS Health to sponsor a pilot called Creators, which essentially. We would train, empower, and equip frontline professionals. So teachers, social workers, rec therapists, you know, people that were already doing the good work that we knew would benefit from our tool and our approach. We launched that in February 15, and, you know, we just celebrated 2 years, and it's been very, very successful. It's spreading across the country. We're in 16 states and soon to be exploring some international opportunities as well.
One of the things I love about Storyteller's Day, which I've been to now a couple of times, is you bring in such a broad spectrum of people. And I have a specific question related to that, but why don't you just tell our audience what Peace of Mind Storyteller's Day is? You can do it better than I can.
Yeah, a number of years ago, like a lot of nonprofits, we would just have a fundraiser, you know, and the team came to us and said, that didn't feel like us. You know, we're making connections to some of the most inspiring, you know, people around the world in the space, and they said, let's put them on a stage and let them tell us their stories and see what happens. But I think the interesting thing about this platform is that, you know, not all, you know, we've got some very acclaimed and famous folks that come and tell us their story, but it's mixed and curated with some people that have never told their story before. So it's very, very authentic and very real, and I think it brings out the best even in the professional speakers to throw their decks away, and what comes out is just an outpouring of just honesty, and a great place to be witness to.
Some of the people you get who speak come from the corporate world, and I'm very intrigued by the corporate world. I mean, we were talking earlier about the government and nonprofits, and you don't often think of the role that corporations and the business world can play in terms of mental health and mental wellness. And yet anyone who works at even a small organization knows of or thinks perhaps there could be someone who might benefit from. So there's a whole sort of new opening into the mental health world, corporations. Yeah. How did you get CVS? CVS is a pretty big company.
Yeah, so CVS, fortunately for us, they're here in Rhode Island. One of our board members, you know, has history with CVS. And, you know, I think for us at the time when we started to partner with CVS, they were focused on, you know, programs that positively impacted children's lives. And they're also a big funder of the arts. So between arts and health, we were an interesting...
In the sweet spot.
We were in the sweet spot, yeah. I think. Yeah, and it was different. And going back to storytellers, you know, one of the ways that we've attracted, I think, corporations is, again, putting them on that platform as well, saying, hey, you're doing really amazing work to create peace of mind within your workforce. This year, Amex was our corporate, you know, a storyteller, and a gentleman by the name of Charles Latarullo, and Charles is running one of the largest global mental wellness initiatives within a company, probably in, you know, 50,000 employees it reaches. It's called Healthy Minds. It's an internal way for American Express to be healthy. You know, to have strong mental health. So I think those are important stories to share and celebrate because there is some amazing work being done out there. And fortunately, if you work for a company like that, you know, you reap the rewards of that.
But there are a lot of companies where you work, and if you have a mental health illness, or issue, it's the last thing you would ever do is tell your boss.
Yeah.
I mean, that's a sort of a corporate-sized or corporate-situated type of stigma, getting back to stigma. It's a different...
Yeah.
You're afraid you're going to lose your job.
Sure.
So how do you combat that? That's a real issue, because you can lose your job at some companies if you are candid about your mental health.
Yeah, it's a great question. I don't know the answer, you know, across the board, but with Amex specifically, they've created an open, you know, supportive atmosphere where their employees can get those services for free through their Healthy Minds and their Healthy Living, you know, clinic. So providing direct services to their employees so that their employees are happier and healthier and, you know, more motivated to be well and to seek out those services, to your point. So not enough companies are doing it, clearly, but I think there's a wave coming, you know, a wave of us starting to understand the importance of mental wellness.
So an event like Storytellers, who's in the audience? Is it open to the public? How do people learn about it?
Yeah, great question. So we really try to make it as diverse as possible. Age, you know, race, you know, your job. So we have 25%. We scholarship to high school students. We think it's important that high school students are part of the conversation. We do it at Rhode Island College, so we get a great base of support from college students. Corporate partners, we want them in the seats to be part of that experience as well, and then the general community, right? So I think it's that kind of 25, 25, 25, 25 mix of making sure that everybody's represented. And that provides, I think, for a very interesting conversation post the event. A lot of questions, a lot of enthusiasm, and a lot of different points of view, a lot of different opinions.
So what is the power of sharing your story? Whether it's in front, and I guess this really is for you, as well as for Matt, what comes from sharing a story, whether you're on a stage before hundreds of people, or you're on a podcast or a YouTube video, or just sharing a story with one-on-one with someone you know, a friend or a relative, or what's the value of that? Why do that? I mean...
Yeah, I mean, I go back to, you know, Matt was talking, the first days he showed up in the children's psych unit at Butler. You know, hospital, not only as a board member, as a patient. And, you know, I did the only thing I was qualified to do is told my story, right? And I guess it was part hope, you know, part maybe shedding some light on something people won't talk about. It's okay. And, you know, it doesn't have to be that complicated. Sometimes it can be, you know, that simple, just the act of and the hope that's given by just sharing.
I know in a lot of the coverage I've done of mental health, talking to professionals and also people living with mental illness, they encourage candor and honesty. And I think that's an important aspect of breaking down stigma. I mean, there was a time not that long ago when if you were writing about mental health, you would not use a real name. Hmm. Some people might not. Or you would not use a real photograph. And that sort of, you know, continued stigma. And have things changed? I mean, is the power of story changing the story on mental health?
I think we have a long way to go, but I think that our confidence is buoyed by the fact that, you know, the work of people like ourselves, you can see the impact that it can have on people, you know, and at the end of the day, you know, it's going to happen. It is going to happen, slowly but surely. And the basis of that is going to be people sharing.
How do people get involved with Peace Love? Is it something that's open to the community in general? If someone wants to reach out to you and take advantage of the kind of services that you provide, how do they do that?
So today the best way is to apply to be a creator. So we have a fairly accessible application process where someone can say, you know, I think this program would be great for my community, my population, my school, my prison, whatever it might be. So they apply to be a creator, and you know, through the support of corporations and our donors, we're able to, you know, scholarship a lot of those opportunities. And we're always trying to figure out how to utilize volunteers better. Mm-hmm. You know, there's a lot of people that want to support us, both from our corporate partners, you know, employee engagement, as well as the general community. So we have some work to do, but we're trying really hard to give people, you know, meaningful ways to get involved and be part of, you know, something that's helping improve people's lives.
What's your website?
Peacelove.org.
Peacelove.org.
So, Jeff, You're living with mental illness, and you're very open about it, and that's a really good thing. And the organization you founded is a really good thing. But there still are people who are secretive and are, for lack of a better word, sort of trapped by stigma. And I understand that not everyone can be candid and open, but what advice do you give somebody who might be listening now or watching who is saying,
that
was me before he went to Butler?
I mean, I'll give you the example I give to people. You know, a blank canvas, no pun intended, has become a real significant thing in the context of, you know, our work, right? And I had a very famous artist tell me one time, he looked at a blank canvas, and he said it was what he was most scared of. And that didn't make sense to me. And then he explained the first stroke is the hardest to make. Mm. You know, and a lot of people won't do what they can do, what they dream of doing, or seek that help because they're scared to start. So, you know, use that as a way, don't be scared to reach out, to start, because that's the beginning.
It's tremendously important work. We thank you for sharing it with us, and we wish Peace Love the best. Jeff Spahr and Matt Kaplan, you can learn more again at peacelove.org. That's all the time we have this week. If you want to know more about Storing the Public Square, you can follow us on Facebook and Twitter, or visit pelscenter.org, where you can also catch up on previous episodes. For G. Wayne Miller, I'm Jim Lutis, asking you to join us again next week for more Storing the Public Square.